Now it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Please offer a warm Dolly Group welcome to Joe from Fresno.
Hi, Dolly. My name is Joe, and I am an alcoholic. And it is by the grace of God and the people like you that I'm sober today. You know, if I can stay sober one more day, one more night, actually, I'll be celebrating 16 years tomorrow. It is November 21st, 1997, and I haven't found it necessary to take a drink or a drug since then, you know, and sometimes, you know, it got pretty close there, but I just didn't find it necessary to do so. I want to welcome the new people to Alcoholics Anonymous. I also want to welcome the ladies and gentlemen of the jury here, because I know there might be a few judges out there. I can see some of you now. And I want to welcome our out-of-town guests as well. Alcoholics Anonymous has turned out to be a great place for me to meet at, and I didn't think so at first. If you're new or relatively new, you know, I came here to tell you a few things, but I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous that you cannot tell an alcoholic anything. And matter of fact, I'll just turn it off if somebody's trying to tell me something. So I'm just going to come up here and share my story, my experience, my strength, and hope with you, in hopes that maybe you might hear something that will relate to your life. Maybe you might want to try your journey in this program. And that's about all I can do here today. My home group is a group of Life on Life friends of Alcoholics Anonymous. We have meetings 3 times a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. So if you're in Fresno, come and look us up. Some people just know us by LOLT, and they'll know exactly what you're talking about. We're not one of those hoity-toity groups, you know. You walk in there and you're going to rarely see any teeth. A lot of tattoos, you know, that's just on the women. You know, there's a lot of level one killers there, you know, doing hard time with a court card. And that's exactly where I fell in. What happened, since we don't have a whole lot of time, I'm going to speed up my story here. By the time I was 42 years of age, I had been to prison twice already. And I go to prison for the things that I do under the influence of alcohol. And at that time, I didn't know it. That was the reason why. I just know that I was going to prison. It was her fault, their fault, the cop's fault, somebody's fault. It was never alcohol's fault or, for God forbid, my fault. You know? I remember the first time I stood in front of the judge, pretty young at that time, and I'm getting ready to get sentenced, and I had heard from all my friends, you know, how great it is to go to prison, you know, that the homeboys are doing this and that, and they're riding on the yard, and they're doing all this stuff, you know, when I grew up, I didn't want to be a lawyer. I didn't want to be a cop. I didn't want to be a construction worker and any of that stuff. I wanted to be an ex-con because I wanted to go do what the homeboys were doing in the yard. You know, and that's exactly what happened. Next thing you know, I'm standing in front of this judge for the things that I do when I drink. Take it back a little bit. I used to love to see these guys, man, you know, that were all sleeved down and tacked up, you know, and they were my heroes. And I'd see them, they'd come home and they were all fucked out, you know, and they talked with this real secret stuff. And I didn't know what they were talking about. I tried to get real close to hear what they're saying, and at that time, I was a scrawny little kid, you know, and he'd come, go over there, go over there, go over there. You know? And I used to look at these guys, and they looked like the Incredible Hulk. And I tell you, I wanted to be one of them guys. So there I am, getting ready to get sentenced. And this, the judge, you know, he brought that hammer down 4 years. But you know, he had asked me something right before he slammed the hammer down on me. He asked me some questions. He looked at me right in the eye. And if you ever read our literature, it says defiance is one of our main characteristics of the alcoholic. And when he looked at me, he asked me, he says, Joe, he says, before I sentence you, I'm going to ask you a question. He says, were you drunk when you did any of this stuff? And I looked at him with that defiant look, and I said, no, sir. No, sir. In the back of my head, I was thinking about that day. I only drank a couple of cases. I wasn't drunk. Yeah. And I know he's trying to get me to say I'm an alcoholic. And then he says, well, let me ask you this. Were you under the influence of any type of small mind-altering substance? And I go, no, sir. No, not me. Yeah. And I'm going to ask you one more time, just in case you didn't understand my question. He said, were you drunk or loaded when you did any of this stuff? And mind you, I had a little probation report the first time around about this big, you know. And I looked at him with all that defiance, you know, and I said, like he didn't hear me the first time. I said, no, sir. And he told me, he looked at me and he said, okay, because you were in your full right mind. You're telling me you were in your full right mind when you did this. He says, I have no other option but to give you the maximum sentence. 4 years, good luck. And you know what? They talk about the insanity, you know. I was so crazy at that time. I was, 4 years, that's great. I'm going to prison, you know. That's exactly what I... Nobody's dream came true. I'm going to prison. I heard that Tootie Lootie's over there doing that on the yard, and Wolfie's over there doing this and that on the yard, and blah, blah, blah. And I wanted to go do something on the yard. Well, I ended up on the yard all right, and it was not no fun. You know, it was not fun at all. And I didn't understand anything. I got back out. Eventually, I got back out. Things that happened in prison happened, and you get out, And I said, you know what, I'm never, ever going to go back there again, ever. And I'm getting released, and I told myself that, and that last gate goes, you know. And you know what, I had already called my victim, and my girlfriend, I had already called her. Yeah, I had already called her and said, will you pick me up? And, okay, you know, and there she is waiting for me. And when that last gate buzzes, I don't know about you, but you know, I don't know if you've ever been in that position, but all I know is that, you know, I could see her out there. She's about 150 feet away from the gate because they make them park way out there in the parking lot. They don't let them get off the car. You got to walk up to the car. And it's the only car out in the parking lot. The rest is full of seagulls out there, I don't know. And all I know is when I cross that last gate, something happens. You know, in my mind, I picture I'm going to run out there and give her a big old hug and kiss and maybe do a little this and that, you know. As soon as I step through that threshold of that gate, I tighten up, you know, and I'm walking real slow and hesitantly towards that car like a robot, you know. And all I can do is she's looking at me with her three teeth, you know, and smiling at me, you know. And got a big old tattoo on her forehead that says Boyd across there, you know. And I want to go up and, you know, do the deal, and I can't. Yeah, all I can do is very like she's looking at me, and I get in the car, and all I can tell her is, come on, let's go. Let's go, get out of here. Let's go. You know, she's waiting for a kiss or something, you know.
I can't. I don't know how to do that, you know. And my head starts to think, you know, what do I do? And I'm the type of guy, you know what, it takes me about 30 minutes of going down the road when I can't see the fence no more, those towers anymore. You know, I just can't see that prison anymore. About 30 minutes, you know, I'm down the road and I'll finally be able to look there and I'll tell her, pull over right there. And it's one of those stores that, it's not a Walmart or a Save Mart or anything. It's one of those Stop and Rods, you know, they got all the stuff plastered in front, you know, and all that, you know, and all kind of announcements, and you can barely see in the store. And every once in a while you see people running out of cases of beer, you know, and I stop right there. And all of a sudden, you know what, something happens to me. And I'll look at her, and all of a sudden I can talk. And my first thing is, got money? You know? Because my disease is already starting to talk to me. You know, and I look at her with a smile and all lovey-dovey, you know. And you know, she's already all confused of why I'm all disturbed anyway, you know. So she'll reach in there and pull out a chair, you know, and hand it to me, and hopefully it'll please me or something. And it does for a moment, you know. And I get it. I don't even tell her thank you. I just get it. And I go inside the store there. And I walk in there with my $20 bill. Her came up last night and heard it more time. And I'll just put it on the table, tell the little Hodge there, Hodge, pack of camels, and I'm full speed ahead to that liquor locker. You know? And mind you, when I was locked up, during one of these times I'm locked up, I was watching this commercial. And all of a sudden they show this commercial and it says, now introducing the silver bullet in a 22-ounce can. Oh my God, 22-ounce can. Oh man, I gotta have it. You know, and all I could think about for the next 6 months of getting out, I wasn't really thinking about her. I was thinking about that 22-ounce can, baby. You know? And I knew she was only a few feet away. And I walked up to that liquor locker and full speed ahead. And I love certain liquor lockers, you know. Some of them, you know what, they got the little sliding doors. The new modern ones got those sliding doors. You know? But I like those old ones, you know. They got those, you know, cook them up. Over there we have a liquor store called Uncle Tom's. We're around for 1,000 years out there. And they had those old liquor lockers where you pry up the handle, you know, and click, you know, and you open it up, and oh, you get that, oh, that cool breeze of fresh air just come pouring in out of there, you know. And if you want to get in a surround sound, you just do them both at the same time. Oh, you know, it just hits you, man. And then, you know, I start looking around, and there they are, the big ones, the short ones, the tall ones, the small ones, you know. The big ones, the black ones and the brown ones. They're all in there. There she is, right in the middle. The silver bullet. Oh man, you know. And you know what? I'll go in, like I said, I'll walk in there and I'll look at it. It's right there in the middle, and I'll reach in and I'll kind of pull it out and caress it out, you know? Something's happening already. I didn't know until I read the book later that alcohol has an effect on me. And sometimes it has an effect even way before I take the drink. You know? And I pull it up close to me, real close like this, you know? And I start, all of a sudden, something happens. You know, the doors close, and it seems like the sun is shining through the roof, and the birds are chirping. And I'm at peace, you know? Walking back, and I collect the change and put it in my pocket, because she's not getting none back, you know? And then I'll get a moment of clarity for a minute. Oh yeah, she's out there roasting in 500 degree weather in that car. I'll go back and buy her something to drink. So I'll go buy her the smallest can on sale that I can find, you know, 88 cents or something like that, you know?
and I'll go out to that car, and I'll look at her with all that lust in my, I mean, all that love in my eyes, and I'll look at her and I'll say, baby, it's going to be different this time. You know, I suffer from a lot of forms of self-deception. The book tells me that. And I really honestly mean it. And I said, I'm never going back to prison again. It's going to be different this time. And I'll give her her little 88-cent can, and I'll get my 22-ouncer, and I'll crack it open, and we'll tackle it. And I'll say, here's two, baby.
Feet away, my mom's right there.
I don't even know how long she had been there ear hustling my conversation with the dog. How dare her? You know? She's right there whimpering. And I said, I said, what's the matter, Mom? And I do this thing, you know? And I said, what's the matter? She looked at me with this look. She goes, don't talk to me. Huh, Matt, you're an alcoholic at my time, and you tell me don't talk to me. Guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to talk to you, man. You know, one more time. What's the matter? She says, what's the matter? What's the matter? She says, just look at you. Just look at you. I was going to give you this house. But look at you. You can't even take care of yourself. She looked at me right in the eyes. She said, you get me sick. She threw down the water hose and took off and went inside crying. And again, if you're an alcoholic in my life, and somebody says, just look at you, guess what I did? I looked at me.
What? What?
I couldn't see it. I couldn't see it. They say you can see when you can see, you can hear when you can hear, and I could not see or hear anything at that time. What's wrong with her? Huh? You know what? I'm gonna move out. Yeah. I'll teach her a lesson. I'm gonna move out. So what did I do? I jumped the fence of my neighbor. The house was empty next door. And I moved into the empty garage next door. Because you know what? The umbilical cord doesn't reach that far, you know? The fence, you know? And there I am, living in the garage next door. Doing my little hustle, picking up bottles and cans. Living the big life, you know? Doing it up big time, you know, picking up bottles and cans, living in an empty dirt garage floor there, you know. And there's no electricity or anything in this place, you know. And one night, I'm in there. And see, mind you, when I go pick up bottles and cans, I get me a big, large, whatever the big bottles are, the big ones, and everything I find has a little bit in it sometimes. And I start filling it up. Fill up the big one, you know? Tequila, okay. Wine, okay. Okay. It doesn't matter. You know? Some of you cowboys have special things you throw in those cans, too. But, that's okay. You know? All I know is that, and the reason I do that is because at 1:30 in the morning, when all the liquor stores are closed, I can't even do a beer run no more, I can't even rob anybody, I can't hustle, nothing, I need something to drink. I need something to drink. And there I am, putting that table down. You know, sitting out for a little special effect for her in there. And what would happen is I would finish it. That night I finished it. And it's still 1:30 in the morning. And see, sometimes, you know, I'm the type of guy that I entertain myself with this other substance. You know? And the reason I do that is because when I get to the bottle, if you look at this bottle right here up close, there's some stuff rolling around the bottle. You ever know? There's something rolling around down here, right? And I swear, if I turn this bottle up just right, it's going to come down. And it doesn't come down. And I put it back down and find it. There it is again. You know? And all I want is a little taste. That's all I want. I'm just sticking my tongue in there. I just want a little taste. I'm going to get me back to this pack when the liquor store goes.
I can't get it out. I'm going to trick it. I'm going to set it upside down, put the cap there, and then it fills up with the cap, and unscrew it, and then they just pick it out the cap. Yeah, a little half a shot right there. Yeah, trick it. So I'll set it down, and I'll play with my other little instrument over here, which requires heating up to about a billion degrees. You know? I'm looking at this bottle. The dog will bark, or the mouse will move, and it's dark in this thing. There's no electricity. It's a dirt floor, empty garage. You know, and I'll, a dog will bark, and some kind of noise will rattle me, and I'll throw it down, and I ain't doing nothing. I'm having here, you know, and I'm all spooked, and then I'll get my senses back, and I'm looking around, and I'll pick her up, you know, and still looking for my bottle there, or keeping an eye on, make sure it's dropping down right, and I'll pick this thing up, put it in my mouth. Forget what end I heat it up to 1,000 degrees, and it'll go. And still on my nerves. Just still trying to suck some life out of this thing. Like I'm trying to suck some life out of an empty bottle. And mind you, that night, not only did I do it once, I did it a few times that night. My lips were all burnt. Going absolutely crazy trying to chase that elusive drink one more time. I'm going crazy. I mean, I'm to the point where I just feel awful. I all of a sudden, you know what? No one had to say, just look at you. All of a sudden, I'm in that empty garage and I can see me. I could see what I had done to you. No one had to tell me just to look at you. I could see and I could feel what I had done to you. And all I know is that that instant, I kind of buckled down on my knees and I did that alcoholic prayer. God help me. That was about 2 weeks or so prior to this date, November 21st, 20th. Couple of weeks prior to that, I'm in that garage. There's a line that, there's some words in our book that talk about pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I understand what that means now. I understand what the first step where it says you have to admit to your innermost self that you're an alcoholic and that your life will become unmanageable. See, we go to these places and they'll give us some paperwork and you fill it out. I mean, you know, the first step, turn it in. It's a good step, okay? Or you'll get a little something, you know, this or that. I've come to learn that the first step comes from right here. From way down in here. Because that night when I was crying, man. I was doing that thing called snot crying. I don't know if you know what that is. Snot crying is not that little boo-hoo stuff because she went away. Snot crying is that stuff that comes from way up in here that hurts. It hurts when you're crying. You cannot stop the snot tears just coming out. You know, our literature talks about hitting that bottom. Why every alcoholic has to hit that bottom before this program works, and I honestly believe that. You have not hit that bottom. Get the heck back out there. Go hit that bottom. So you feel so broken inside, you're willing to do whatever it takes, whatever these people, and that's what happened to me. I wound up in a program, and they told me to do this and this and this, and I became willing to do whatever they asked. It went against everything I thought. And it was some simple stuff. It's some simple stuff. They told me, Joe, when you get out of this program, I wound up in a program. Well, what happened? This is what happened. I said that prayer, God help me. 2 weeks later, I'm sitting in my mom's living room one more time. 3 days have gone by since I came home because I had stolen some stuff out of my own home. And 3 days have gone by, so I figured they forgot about it. I did, you know. So there I am home again, wondering what I'm going to steal next. What can I get? Where's my mom's purse at? And all of a sudden, I've got this head spinning, and what am I going to get a drink next? What am I going to do next? And all of a sudden, the door goes, and I look up, and there's my parole agent. Oh, man. I used to run from them guys before. I don't run no more. They catch you, they hit you. I don't like that. So he says, open the door, Joe. Just a few feet away. I live in a small house. Just open the door. He's looking right at me through this little flimsy screen lock door, the kind of old homes, you know, have a little flimsy screen lock. One little pool with a nail and everything comes out, you know. He says, open the door. He says, if I pull this, your mom's not going to like it. I'm going to break her lock. All right. There I go. Turn around. Click, click. Get in the car. Yes, sir. You know? And see, something happens, too, when I get in that car. It's like that. You ever play that Pac-Man and you lose your last man and you hear that little sound and it goes, ding! You know? Well, I hear that. When I get into the police car and they sit me down, I hear that noise. Game over. You know? And I do the next indicated thing. I just flop over. Time to start sleeping. I ain't been sleeping in I don't know how long. You know, I pass out within the first minute I'm in the back seat. Every time. Because I know the next thing, they're going to knock on the window. Time to get out, take my belt off so I don't hang myself and shoe strings and all that stuff and go to the drill. So I pass out for about a second or so. I hear that knock. I figure we're at the jail already. Quick. I'm still in front of my house. And he says, I'm going to ask you a question. He says, you want to go back to law school again? Or you want to go to a program? Law school program. You know, I started thinking like a newcomer does, think. Yeah, I says, Thanksgiving. Law school, they serve that shiny stuff that looks like turkey. Program, they serve the real thing, baby. Yeah, I took the program. So I didn't have any intent on getting sober. None. My whole motivation to go to a program during this time of year was to get turkey. Yeah. Well, like I said, I went in there. Thank God the people of hospitals and institutions came in to share their message. They came in week after week, happy, smiling, passing out literature. People love you. And, you know what, this guy shared something really simple. He says, Joe, when you get out of a program like this, he says, try this. He says, go to a meeting within the first 24 hours of getting out. He says, go to the same meeting at the same time so you can get to know the people and the people can get to know you. Now, mind you, I didn't want to know you, and I'm damn sure I don't want you to know me. He says, get a home group. Get into service. You know what? I've seen Brett in service here for a long time. If not here, in other places, hospitals and institutions. Man, you know what? It almost brought me to tears watching him. He's giving it his all. And that's his program. You've got to give it your all. You can't read. Just give it your all. We are not. You know what? And that's what they told me. Give it your all. See, I gave it my all out there. I gave it my all. Everything I could. 24/7, it was hard work doing what I was doing out there. And I gave it my all, baby. You know what? I come down about the mountain, they told me to give it my all. Do my best. And I started to do those things. I got myself a sponsor, and I didn't realize I had done my first step. I had done my first step that night when my lips were all burnt and I'm trying to suck out that last drop, and I'm so broken. And when I cried out to God, that was my second step. I didn't know it at the time. And when I finally said, you know what, I'm going to do what these people are asking me to do.
I don't want to go to a meeting within the first 24 hours. My plan is to go get a little bit of within the first 24 hours. So it's against all my nature, but you know what? I'm going to go. And at that instant, I began to turn my will and my life over to the chance of good on the direction. And I was beginning to take my first, my third step. I'm there, home one more time. Just got there, don't know what to do. Pacing the floor back and forth with myself and inside my bedroom. Because if you're an alcoholic of my type, my bedroom feels like a cell. I'm sober and I don't know what to do next. I don't, like the first day on the yard, I don't know what to do. You know, I'm irritable, discontented. What do I do? My mom's out there. You know, I don't even want to talk to her. What do I say? Hi, Mom. She's right there a few feet away from me, and I go out there and test the water, and I said, Mom, I'm going to a meeting. She turned around and looked at me like, yeah, right. Right, you're going to a meeting. I said, I'll be back. She looked at me right in the eye, and she didn't have to say it. When are you coming back this time? 30 minutes later? 30 months later? You know, she just had that look. She wouldn't even know my drill. She's been living it for a long time. I'm sure there may be one or two of you who put people through that. And you know what? I was in this recovery home, and they taught me to do something there. My job was to dump the trash. I had to dump the trash. I'd go around every 2 hours to the trash can. Mind you, nobody had put anything in it. You know, same trash can, but I got to go pick it up, shake it, nothing in there, and put it down. And if there was a little piece of paper in there, I had to take the plastic out, wrap it up, and do the drill, put it in the bag, and all, you know. That was my duty. I had to do it. So I'm telling Mom that I'm going to go to this meeting and tell her I'll be back. And she's looking at me, and out of the corner of my eye, I see that trash can. It's overflowing. I can always do this. You know, because isn't it her job to dump the trash? She was telling me mine. And I looked at it. Something happened. I didn't even realize it. Next thing you know, I walked over to the trash can, pushed the stuff in, tied the bag up, took it outside to the main trash can, threw it in there, came back. I put a new plastic bag, and I looked at my mom. I told her, I'll be back. And I looked at my mom, and she's like this. She goes, yeah. What got into her? I didn't realize that was the beginning of starting to do something different. Starting to give back a little bit. You hear about that in those programs, give back. I didn't know that could be that simple. Dump in the trash in my own house. You know? Simple stuff like that, because that's about all I could handle when I was new. Simple stuff. You know, my sponsor told me in the beginning, he says, you need to join the S&S Club, Joe. I said, okay, I will. What's the S&S Club? Because I wanted to please the guy and do everything. He says, it's that club where you sit down and shut up. That wasn't very nice, you know. Kind of mean. And then he told me something else. He says, I got something else to tell you, Joe. I go, what's that? He goes, get a job. What? Stop drinking and get a job? Oh my God. What an order, you know? But you know what? I got a job. You know, they told me, Joe, you can do that. You can do better than what you've been doing. I live in that hopeless state of mind and body that the book talks about. I don't think I can do better. I'm always going to be an alcoholic. I'm always going to be a crackhead. You know? But you know what? God had a better plan for me than I had for myself. Just do it. Just go apply. And I started to do it. Put in those applications at places that I thought I'd never ever get a job. Everywhere there was an opening. He said, just fill it out. Put it in. You know what? I got that job. I got the job. I got the dollars. I got the new car. I got the nice ring. I even got her back. The best part about it was I got rid of her again, you know? Life was really getting good. Life was getting good. And you know what? When I got out of the program, my life was down here and my mom was right here. And in about 4 years of doing this program to the best of my ability, working with a sponsor, getting involved with my home group, my life started to go up, getting those things I'm telling you about, you know? And I met this woman at about 4 years of sobriety. And her name was Mom. This is the person that I terrorized, victimized, humiliated, everything. You know, I met this woman and I found out what unconditional love was. My mom had loved me, being the dirty, rotten rat that I was. You know, and something started to happen around 4 years of sobriety. Her life started to spiral down, and my life started to take off upwards. And it got to the point she could no longer walk anymore. And I found out why I went to prison, why I had to work out in that weight pile, how I had to come out, be all yoked out like my heroes were. Because I found out God was preparing me for the day when my mother could not walk anymore. And I could take my big clunky butt over there and scoop her up off the couch and set her in the bed, from the bed to the potty. You know, I learned something happened that I did not know was going to happen to me in Alcoholics Anonymous, is that I was going to learn how to take care of another human being from head to foot. I'm talking about, our book talks about our purpose is to be a maximum service to God and to the people about us. And I didn't know that the person about me was going to be my mother. That my mother, God had a plan for me to be back at home to take care of her. And I'm talking about not just looking in the door and throwing her a hamburger or something. I'm talking about full care. Washing her, bathing her, combing her hair, things that I never thought I'd find her underclothes and dressing her and everything. I didn't know how to do that. The book with Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't tell me how to do that. It's you people who have told me, try this, do that, ask for help here. You guys helped me do it. You know, I got real mad because I got a sister who lives a couple of blocks away from me. I said, how come she doesn't come over here and tell my sponsor I'm crying to him? How come she doesn't come over here and help me? He says, Joe, you either shit or get off the pot. You said you were going to do this, didn't you? I said, yep. He said, then do it. He says, don't worry about what anybody else does. Your sister, she's going to have a higher power to answer to when that comes, and you're not the one. You're not that power. So you either do this or not. And you know what? I buckled down, and I took care of my mom for the last 5 years of her life. And something, one of those things, you know, it says, great events will come to pass for you and countless others. We read that. And I'll tell you the greatest, one of the greatest events in my life is that I got to be there on June 24th of 2005. I got to reach over and hold my mother's hand, and she did something like this. She goes, ah. And her little camera went out that day. I got to be there. I was not locked up in some program, prison, jail. I was not out there being the scum of the earth. I was right there by her side. And Alcoholics Anonymous gave me the opportunity to do that. You people told me I learned how to stand up on my own 2 feet. You people told me how to do those things. You taught me how, one day at a time, to even push me sometimes. And I allowed myself to be pushed. I allowed myself to do those, you know, do this, okay, do that, okay. And it went against everything I did. And I got to be there. And I got to, you know what? Sure, I still feel sad about my mom passing away. I feel sad about those things, but that's all I feel sad. I don't have no more regrets. I don't have no, I coulda, shoulda, woulda, if only, nah. I just do those things, man. You know, since then, my life has taken a lot of twists and turns. You know, things have happened that I just cannot believe. I've had the opportunity to drive across country. I've always wanted to do that. I don't know if you guys ever sat on the couch and traveled all over the place, you know? But I wish I could do that. You know what? One day, you know, an opportunity came. I said, we need somebody to drive a car to Massachusetts. Can you do it? Yeah, I can do it. You got a license? Yeah, I got a license. I didn't know, just being sober and being ready, that opportunities just come. They just come sometimes, you know? And I've been blessed in so many ways, you know? I'm really grateful to be here. I know some of you got to leave pretty soon. You know, I got a bad case of on, and I can just keep going here, man, because I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I know I've only talked about the first 3 steps, but you know what? A lot of you are in program, and that's about all you're going to get in your program. Come out here and join us. You know what? I'm going to share something from this book before. If you ever get one of these books and think I'm lying, it's on page 101, and it talks about people like me who are in the program office. In our belief, any scheme of combating alcoholism which proposes to shield the sick man from temptation is doomed for failure. And you know what? I was doomed for failure. I was going to do my little program. I was going to get out. And if I didn't join up with something, AANACA, I was doomed for failure. And I'm glad I got some good direction, and I listened to that man that told me to go to a meeting within the first 24 hours. It was the best decision I've ever made. Get a home group, go to the same meeting at the same time, so you can get to know the people and the people can get to know you. I walked in here in this group and about 3 or 4 people knew me, and I'm not even from Lithuania. Man, that's a good feeling, man. That's a good feeling. They know me by my first name. Some of them might even know my last name. You know, that's a great feeling. I love this program, man. I don't know what God has in store for you. But I know he's got some great things set up for you. Like I said, I hate to tell you anything, but I'm gonna. Just get willing, man. Just get willing. And if you ain't had enough pain yet, come out there and get some more pain. Come get some more. I'm hoping to say, go out there and do some more controlled drinking. Well, do some more controlled crack smoking. Yeah. Anyway, I probably spoke enough here. Some of you guys got to get going. Again, nobody told you that you're loved. You are loved today. You are loved today. You know why you're loved? Because a higher power has you here today, safe and sound. Thank you for loving me.